Hello, and welcome to this special FDA approval edition of the Doc Talk podcast. I'm Patrick Campbell, editor with HCP Live, and I'll be your host for today's edition of the show. Today, we'll be talking with Dr. Ballantyne about the approval of bempedoic acid and where this drug fits into current regimens. First, I'd just like to start with you introducing yourself, Dr. Ballantyne, and then we can dive into some questions.
Hi, I'm Christy Ballantyne. I'm the Chief of Cardiology at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And I was the chair of the Phase 3 lipid advisors for the bempedoic acid program.
All right, and now since bempedoic acid has been approved, I guess the first question is, how monumental is it that for the first time in decades we have a non-statin option approved for lowering LDL-C, even as an adjunct?
Well, I think it's an important new option for both physicians and patients. Statins are fantastic drugs. They're highly effective. We have great data on them. But if we look at the two most common reasons people see adults, basically are seeing doctors in follow-up or nurses or healthcare providers, is basically high blood pressure and cholesterol. Now, if we look at the way we treat blood pressure, we have lots of options. And the average patient is frequently on combination therapy. Now, that's an older field, but, you know, we have many, many different options, different mechanisms of actions. So you can work through and get people to their goals. It's interesting, if we take a look at the field of cholesterol, usually people stop after option number one. And a lot of people are not being effectively treated. So I think this is an important step to be able to offer our patients new options to help them get their LDL cholesterols down to a zone that's more favorable.
All right, thank you for that. And now, next, what does the ideal patient population for bempedoic acid look like? Because with every drug, not every person that has the conditions it was approved for will see the same benefit that other people may have. So what does the ideal patient for bempedoic acid look like?
Yeah, so the first thing is that this is not going to replace statins as first-line therapy. Statins will remain the first-line therapy. So where this is used is if you have a high-risk patient and on maximally tolerated statin, they're still not where you want their LDL cholesterol to be. And so the approval specifically focuses on people who have documented atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease or people with familial hypercholesterolemia. That's a group that we know it's sometimes challenging to get their LDL cholesterols down to a desirable range. And maximally tolerated statin varies from patient to patient. If a patient's able to tolerate a high dose of a high efficacy statin, rosuvastatin 20 or 40, atorva 40 or 80, then very frequently we don't need to add a second medication. But it happens that there are people who cannot tolerate these dosages, or else they just have very, very high LDLs or don't respond well, and they need additional therapies.
Okay, thank you for that. And now we know that, as you touched on, bempedoic acid was approved as an adjunct for lowering LDL-C, but some analysis of the four CLEAR trials found benefits in other areas as well, including HDL cholesterol, total cholesterol, and hsCRP. Can you dive a bit into the mechanism of ACL inhibitors and explain what this might mean in a clinical setting?
Right. So this drug inhibits ATP citrate lyase, and that's an enzyme that's important in the synthesis of cholesterol. It's a prodrug. It gets activated in the liver to the active form, so specifically targeting the liver production of cholesterol. That's a similar mechanism to what statins do. They're also inhibiting cholesterol synthesis. It's a different enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase. They both end up lowering cholesterol in the cell and increasing LDL receptors. This is complementary to the mechanism of action, for example, of a ezetimibe that blocks cholesterol production, or PCSK9 inhibitors. So what ends up happening is what was seen in the CLEAR program is that the drugs could be various options, combinations added together, and you reduce LDL cholesterol. That means you're going to also reduce total cholesterol. What was interesting is the reduction in C-reactive protein. Statins, which block cholesterol synthesis, reduce CRP, and so does this agent. Some of the other therapies that work by different mechanisms, PCSK9 inhibitors alone do not lower CRP. Ezetimibe alone does not lower CRP. So it seems to be something that's shared with the way a statin works.
All right, thanks for diving into that a bit deeper for us. And now, from a patient perspective, one of, if not the biggest question for any drug in this field is, can we expect the effects to translate to a reduction in mortality and or serious events for patients? Is this lipid-lowering effect going to translate into something like that, you think, or is it too early to tell?
Well, in regards to this question, I think one of the reasons that the FDA approved this for the use of LDL-lowering therapy is that LDL, the levels of LDL cholesterol are a very strong surrogate marker for benefit. In other words, the FDA will approve drugs that lower LDL or that lower blood pressure, and in particular, if they understand the mechanism. The mechanism here is by basically upregulating LDL receptors, which is the same way that statins work, PCSK9 inhibitors, ezetimibe, all work that. They all do the same thing, and they've all shown benefit. So we don't have outcomes trials yet, but we do have a considerable amount of data. And also, it's very important that there is a large outcomes trial in patients who are statin intolerant that's already fully enrolled. So we'll have that answer pretty soon. But I think we have sufficient data that someone can end up saying, if I need further LDL reduction, I have an agent which has been studied in a lot of patients. It's shown that it's effective. It has a good safety profile, and I'll have further data in the near future.
Okay, thank you for that. And now, just lastly, really quick, is there anything else that you think is important that clinicians should keep in mind when prescribing bempedoic acid to a patient in a real-world setting? I know we saw an increase in rates of hyperuricemia and tendon rupture in the studies. How do you approach that in a clinical setting?
So one thing that's important is that first question is asking someone, do they have a history of gout? People who had a history of gout in a higher level of uric acid, those were the individuals who are most likely to have an increase in uric acid, and they would also have an increased risk for gout. So important, does someone have a history of gout, and what is the level of uric acid? If they're taking allopurinol, the level's low, then you're fine. And there are other individuals that may be at high risk, so it would not be unreasonable if you were concerned about someone getting a baseline level of uric acid. If it's high, you keep an eye on that. The issue of tendon rupture, this is one that I think we're going to need more data on this. We weren't really, as we were doing the trials, it really wasn't very clear. And one of the things that there was a 2-to-1 randomization, so we had twice as many patients on the treatment as the placebo, but obviously it's a warning. So if someone is starting to have problems with a tendon and they're having some soreness or pain, it would be reasonable to stop the medication and then to follow the patient and see if things improved or not.
Okay, that was about it on my questions. Was there anything else you wanted to add about bempedoic acid that I might not have touched on?
Yeah, I think let me just put one comment here. You know, I think that bempedoic acid, as I mentioned, it's a new option. But I think one of the things that's going to be happening is that in general, we will begin to treat lipids in a manner that's probably more similar to the way that we treat blood pressure. And blood pressure, we start with monotherapy. We quickly go to combination therapy, frequently have two medicines in one pill. And it's very common to actually have people who are on three medications in a high-risk person when you're trying to get the LDL cholesterol down excuse me, where you're trying to get the blood pressure down to a low level. And that's going to be probably similar, I think, to the future for a lot of people who are having difficult to treat LDLs, that we're going to use more combination therapy.
All right. Well, I just want to say before I let you go, thank you for taking part in the DocTalk podcast, Dr. Ballantyne.
Thank you.
All right. That's it for this edition of the DocTalk podcast. I'm Patrick Campbell, editor with HCP Live. Thank you for listening.